Welcome to the Texas Tech Medcast, a family medicine podcast presentation of the Texas Tech School of Medicine in Lubbock. This is the Reynolds Geriatric Series, teaching podcasts for medical residents, students, and practicing physicians. Hello, on today's edition of the Texas Tech Medcast, we are going to talk about five pearls to keep in mind in prescribing for the elderly. And we're here today with Dr. Mike Reagan of the Department of Family Medicine, Dr. Kitty McMahon of the Department of Pharmacology and Neurosciences, and Dr. Lynn Bickley in the Department of Internal Medicine, all of us with the Texas Tech School of Medicine in Lubbock. Dr. Reagan, take it away.
Well, this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart, and I learned a great deal from a mentor who taught me some key pearls about prescribing in the elderly. And I've found that those pearls are very useful. And so our plan today is to talk about those pearls and to talk about why they work and a little more about how to prescribe properly in the elderly. I'm going to hit the five pearls and then we'll come back and go through each one individually. The first one is know your starting point. The second one is prescribe specifically. The third one is start low and go slow with drug titration. The fourth one is interactions, always be on alert. The fifth one is stop more drugs than you start and you'll be successful prescribing to the elderly. Okay, we'll turn to the first one. Know your starting point. It's important to know what drugs there are out there. What are the important considerations, Dr. Bickley, in terms of taking a history of drugs in the elderly?
Well, one of the first things is you need to make sure that your list is the same as the patient's list. So often older patients really aren't sure what the medicines are that they're on, and they don't know what they do. And it's very important to find out from them what they think they're on, and then compare that to the list that you have. And that gets right away to please fill up a brown bag and bring in all your pills the next time you come and see me, so we're both on the same page.
That brown bag approach is really useful to see everything that they're using. Are there any pitfalls, though, in terms of talking about medications, other things you have to worry about?
Well, there's so many things in an older patient. Even if they might know the name, they might not really understand what it's for. Some read better than others. They may not be taking the medicine as prescribed the same number of times that you think they are every day. There may be a whole range of things that they're taking that you don't know about. Over-the-counters, herbal medicines, for example.
I think that's a great point. Sometimes the elderly don't think that their herbal supplements or their over-the-counter medicines or even medications. They just think of the prescription ones. And, of course, you know, there are interactions among all of those. In terms of prescribing specifically for indications, do you have any thoughts about that, Dr. McMahon?
Well, of course, one of the problems with the elderly is that the drugs themselves are going to cause interactions, or there are interactions between the drugs with either the other drugs or other pathologies besides what you're treating for. So being very specific about what's being treated and how you're going about treating it helps eliminate a lot of those interaction problems. So being very, very specific about why you would want to start a new drug becomes very important, particularly in the elderly, when they're obviously lots of times on many, many drug medications.
You know, sometimes it's helpful to have an example of a condition where you need to be specific in how you're treating. And one that comes to mind is agitation in the elderly. What do you think about that in terms of trying to figure that out?
Well, I think that's a very big pitfall for physicians, particularly physicians in training, because so often a resident, for example, may be called over the phone about a patient who seems agitated. Well, it could be low oxygen. It could be a drug interaction. It could be a pending infection.
And so knowing the specific indication might very well change your therapy if you do a little bit of background to figure out why the agitation is happening. I think that's a helpful clarification of that. Now, in terms of this concept of starting low and going slow, what we really mean by that, I think, is start at lower doses than usual and titrate upward on the doses more slowly. And I'd be interested to know, Dr. McMahon, what sorts of pharmacological reasons that is a good idea.
Of course, in the elderly, all of their organs, as the person ages, begin working less and less efficiently. And that is particularly true in the liver and the kidney. And of course, that's where the drugs are most likely to be metabolized and or eliminated. So if a drug is not being either metabolized or eliminated as quickly as it does in a younger person, you can get into situations where the dose is too high very quickly, and you have to be very careful to avoid that. So the start low and go slow idea is to look at both the time that it takes to metabolize a drug, as well as whether or not it's being metabolized at all. You start low because you don't know what the actual blood level needs to be, or how much you need to give to achieve a functional drug level. And you go slow because the metabolism the half-life may actually be much longer than you would expect in a normal or a younger person. So in both cases, you just really need to be very, very careful to make sure that you don't go over the effective drug dose.
Well, I think that's real helpful to think about the changes in the kidney and the liver. One of the things that's always interested me, and I'm not sure I understand it very well, is the volume of distribution of drugs. Is there a change there as well with older patients?
Sure. What happens in the elderly is that their muscle mass diminishes because they can't move around as much, as well as just normal aging process. And of course, the muscle mass makes up the biggest part of the aqueous volume of the body, and that leaves the fat to muscle ratio to change significantly, and that has an impact on the distribution of lipid-soluble drugs, giving them longer half-lives, and aqueous-soluble drugs having higher concentrations because the aqueous volume is decreased. In both cases, if it's a lipid-soluble drug, you'll see an extended half-life. If it's a aqueous-soluble or water-soluble drug, you'll see an increased blood level, even if the half-life hasn't changed. So again, it has an impact on either extending the time the drug stays at a very high concentration or the actual peak concentration being higher.
Great, that's helpful. Is there an example, maybe, of a drug that's more aqueous-soluble and one that's more fat-soluble that you can relay to us?
Well, an example that's really dangerous in any population, but particularly the elderly, in terms of the aqueous-soluble, digoxin is one that you really have to be very careful with in terms of the concentration in the blood. And of course, that's partially because it has such a small or narrow window of effective to toxic doses, but either because of changes in albumin levels in the blood, or in combination with the volume of the aqueous side of things, you can get into very dangerous levels of digitoxin very easily.
You know, one of the areas that I've always seen just in training program is residents who get impatient about Coumadin levels. Oh. And they'll start off with a 5 milligram starting dose, and real quickly they'll escalate to 7.5 or 10 milligrams without waiting for the effectiveness to roll out over a few days. And then almost always the patient ends up being toxic on Coumadin. And I think that's another place where starting low and going slow is an important kind of watchword.
I have a question for you, Dr. McMahon.
Okay.
Often patients have the idea that all vitamins are the same, particularly our older patients, because they get tired and they think, you know, more is better. And vitamins A, D, E, and K are fat soluble, so you can get toxic from those. Does that relate to the concepts that you were just talking about, the aqueous component and the lipid component?
Yeah, it can very definitely. You can get into vitamin toxicities if the individual is taking, you know, higher than normal levels. And of course, that's one reason, like over-the-counter vitamin supplements are usually fairly careful about the actual levels of those lipid-soluble vitamins. So yeah, you can get into problems with the lipid-soluble.
It's a good point, and sometimes you can buy those lipid-soluble vitamins individually and not in a combination, and by yourself you can overdose on those levels.
Yeah.
So a great point, and also it points out the importance of considering supplements and vitamins instead of just the prescription medications. Well, let's turn to the fourth point, and that is interactions. I think that we've received a lot of press lately about drug interactions and the concerns there, and I think it's out in the press, but I think it's worth repeating because it's so important. What are the chances of an elderly person having a drug interaction? Is there any data on that?
Oh, there's lots of data on that issue, and of course the elderly are, in and of itself, being elderly doesn't put someone at any greater risk of having an interaction than anybody else. It's just that the elderly are much more likely to be taking medications. They're much more likely to have comorbidities for whatever they're being treated with. All of those things in combination make it very, very likely that an elderly person will have a drug interaction or a adverse effect of some kind. There's a kind of a general rule that if a person is taking six medications, whether they're over-the-counter, prescribed, herbal, or anything else, that they have an 80% chance of having at least one significant adverse effect because of one of those medications. And, you know, if we think about our elderly population, even in a, quote, healthy elderly person, they're very likely to be on at least two or three prescribed medications as well as some over-the-counter medications. So it's extremely common to have someone in the elderly population that are taking at least six medications.
Unfortunately, I see lists that have 20 or more.
Right.
So you're almost guaranteed of having an interaction or a side effect of some kind.
One of the things that has been very useful to me has been to learn about the Beers criteria. And these were developed maybe 8-10 years ago, a list of drugs that inspectors use for nursing homes to look at those drugs that are commonly prescribed with older patients that really do have negative side effects, particularly some of the anticholinergic effects.
Sort of a high-risk list of medications?
Exactly. And this list has just been updated in the past several years. But one of the interesting things is so many drugs we prescribe for older people have a cumulative anticholinergic effect. That's one of the things that's popped out as people use the Beers criteria, even to look at patient drug lists in the office. For example, I'll just mention, so many people think Benadryl is a great drug to prescribe for sleep at night in an older person. Well, that's one of the major don't prescribe drugs on the Beers criteria.
Because of the anticholinergic
exactly.
side effects of that.
Right.
And it's interesting to think about that in terms of a cumulative effect. So if you have several drugs that have anticholinergic effects, it may accentuate those symptoms associated with anticholinergics. What would you see in a patient who had too much anticholinergic effect?
Well, of course, you can see things like blurred vision,
Constipation,
effects on the GI tract.
Dry mouth certainly can be a part of that.
Yeah. Confusion, I guess, is the one that comes up probably most often in what I hear about in terms of anticholinergic problems in the elderly.
So that might be a useful tool then for the clinician to review how many drugs have anticholinergic effects and maybe consider discontinuing those if you see any of those symptoms manifest themselves in your patients. Great. Turning to the stop more drugs than you start. This concept is about trying to reduce the number of medications any given patient is taking. I think we've talked some about that. Do you have any other thoughts about that?
Well, I think this is very important right now because, among other things, the cost of drugs you know, even taking four or five drugs can give you a $500 drug bill. So then the older person doesn't take any of them because they don't know which one they need the most. So from a cost point of view, I think it's very important to keep the number of drugs to a minimum.
So I guess there's a couple of reasons that we've discussed so far. One is the cost. Absolutely always have to consider that. I think the second thing is what we said about six drugs in the regimen, including over-the-counter, and you're going to end up most likely having an interaction or a side effect. And so a couple of good reasons. And those are just kind of nice rules of thumb. And that rule, I think, is meant to empower physicians to actively stop medicines. One of the things that's always amazed me is sort of the magical thinking that happens around medicines. And elderly people in particular will believe this. Well, that's my heart pill, and my heart keeps going because I take that pill. And they're almost afraid to stop a medicine. They feel like it has some sort of magical power to keep them going. So that rule, I think, is meant to empower physicians. Go ahead. Step out there. Stop a medicine and see how it goes. I know the J&C recommendations for hypertension have recommended drug holidays if someone's well controlled. And so this is another way you can use that rule. Well, I really think we've had some great comments today. I really appreciate that. And I'd like to kind of go back through those five and recap them. One is you got to know where you're starting. Take a good drug history. Make sure you know about over-the-counter medications and herbals. Make sure you know every drug the patient's taking. They may be seeing multiple doctors, and we need to know what they're getting. The second is to prescribe specifically. Have a reason to prescribe a drug before you prescribe it and be certain of that reason. The third idea is to start low and go slow in titration of dose of medications. The fourth idea is to watch carefully for interactions. And then the fifth idea is to simplify drug regimens as much as possible. Feel empowered. Stop more drugs than you start.
Hi, this is Kitty McMahon from Texas Tech Health Science Center here in Lubbock, Texas, and I have the pearl of the day. I want to talk just a minute about the dose regimen that you use in the elderly. Rather than thinking about just picking the normal dose on a drug and prescribing it to the patient, make sure you think about needing to, again, start low and go slow, but with the idea that when you start it at a lower dose, you're going to be looking for a specific response rather than just increasing the dose until you start seeing adverse effects. So you want to be looking, have identified a specific response that you're expecting the patient to come to within about 3.5 to 4 half-lives of the drug. After you've given that dose, if you're not seeing a response, you may want to consider, if it's realistic for that particular drug, to look at blood levels and see if it's actually gotten up to that level to what is considered the normal effective blood level. But if you can't see a response, rather than increasing the dose to anything above a normal adult dose, you should seriously consider looking at changing the drug to a different compound. That's the pearl for the day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Texas Tech Medcast. For more information, please go to www.ttuhsc.edu/FAMMED. FAMMED. I'm Betsy Jones, Associate Professor of Family and Community Medicine at Texas Tech and the producer of this podcast series.